Blog Talk Radio.
My telephone rang one evening, my buddy called for me. Said the bankers all are leaving, you better come round and see. It starts in Revelation, they robbed the nation blind. They're all down at the station, no banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the station, no banker left behind. Well, the bankers called a meeting, to the White House they went one day. They was going to call on the president in a quiet and a sociable way. And the afternoon was sunny, and the weather, it was fine. They counted out our money, and no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the White House, no banker was left behind. Conductor's calling all aboard, we'll be leaving soon. With champagne and shrimp cocktails, and that's not all you find. There's a $1 billion bonus and no banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. When the train pulled out next morning, no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. When the train pulled out next morning,
good afternoon, 99ers. This is Dusty. I'm sitting in for Gwen Berry, our usual host here on Here Be Monsters. Our show is sponsored by Roundtree7.com. That's the number 7. I am one of the writers there, as is Gwen. The term 99ers was, up until now, was used for people who had run out of their unemployment, who had been on unemployment for over 99 weeks. The term has now gone global, as it describes the rest of us who aren't the rich 1% in the world. The speaking of global, the movement went global this weekend. Huge, huge global. Over 900 protests around the world. I call it the Global Day of Protest. A few of my blogger buddies also attended their own OWS marches Saturday, and they have blogged about it. I'd like to give them a shout out. Suzanne, who blogs at Potter's, Welcome to Pottersville 2, blogged about it, and then Thunder, If the Thunder Don't Getcha, I use the name Thunder for him, his blog is called If the Thunder Don't Getcha .blogspot.com. He also did a nice piece on it. I hope you visit their their blogs because they give first-person accounts along with pictures. Suzanne attended the Greensboro March, and Thunder attended the Columbus March. So kudos to both of those patriots, and I adore them for their commitment to the cause. Like I said, there were over 900 cities this weekend globally that marched upon their various entities. The police got shitty in quite a few. I'm just going to make some short notes here, some short statements on what went down. It says police have arrested, this is from VOA, which is the it's voanews.com. It's called Voices of America. Police have arrested hundreds of protesters in several cities across the United States as the anti-corporate Occupy Wall Street movement continues to spread across the country. In the Midwestern city of Chicago, police on Sunday arrested 175 people who refused to leave a public park. In Washington, D.C., police arrested at least 19 people protesting on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court. More than 100 protesters were arrested across the state of Arizona. The arrests were mostly peaceful and came one day after tens of thousands demonstrated in cities across the world against what they see as corporate greed. The vast majority of those protests were peaceful, of course, but there was violence in Rome, where hundreds of hooded, masked demonstrators hurled rocks, bottles, setting fires and smashing banks and shop windows. More than 70 people were injured. It should be noted here that the nonviolent march was taken over by the violent people. It was never intended to be that way, of course. That's the sad part, and as far as I know, the only violence that occurred worldwide Saturday with all the over 900 marches that were attended. To continue reading the VOA article, it says, in London, several hundred protesters have established a campsite just outside St. Paul's Cathedral, which is adjacent to the British capital's financial district. Protesters have also turned out in Australia, Asia, and South Africa. South Africa? The demonstrators are seeking to focus attention on what they see as corporate greed and economic inequality, the increasing gap between the rich and the poor across the globe. And it makes me smile when you think about it. Knowing that the movement is growing exponentially in spite of everything that is being done by various law enforcement officials to shut them all down. And like I said, as far as I can tell, the only occupation that turned violent was the Rome occupation. This brings up another point that's something that really bothers me, and it's the level of police brutality is also growing as well. There are usually daily reports coming out of New York City about the fuckery that's being pulled by a select few of the NYPD, which many view as a disgusting attempt to egg on the protesters into becoming violent. The Guardian, which is a newspaper out of the United Kingdom, did a big story on it too, and they singled out one cop in particular who now has two separate brutality instances that have been caught on video. And I'm going to read from that Guardian article too, which names the inspector. His name is Johnny Cardona. The Guardian article goes as follows. A lawyer acting on behalf of Occupy Wall Street protester who was allegedly assaulted by a New York police officer on Friday has called for an investigation into the behavior of the deputy inspector involved after video evidence appeared to show the same officer engaging in the rough handling of a woman protesting in an earlier incident. Ron Kuby, a Manhattan-based criminal defense lawyer who specializes in cases of alleged brutality, police brutality, has written to the New York District Attorney Cyrus Vance calling for a full, complete, and lengthy investigation into Friday's incident. He said that his client, Felix Rivera Petre, would fully cooperate with any such investigation. There is video of the scuffle, and it was first posted by the blog in New York called The Gothamist. It appears to show that the white-shirted police officer grabbed Rivera from behind, swinging him around, and then punching him in the face. Rivera falls to the ground, suggesting that the punch had considerable impact. The officer has been identified in news reports as Deputy Inspector Johnny Cardona. Over the weekend, new video evidence emerged relating to an earlier controversy, which also appears to have involved Cardona. Now, the New York Police Department has not said a word about Inspector Cardona or his actions, which have been caught on video by a lot of people. I find the fact that his actions are being reported in a British newspaper very important because it speaks to the fact that the ever-increasing police brutality in New York City is being watched by the entire world. What really bothers me is that the New York Police Department doesn't seem to want to address this. What they usually do is they try to blame it on the protesters. According to the Guardian write-up, the official line that the NYPD is holding is that the occupiers have always provoked the cops in all instances that are caught on video. And I really love that. It's making the victims the perpetrators. And, you know, it's pretty hard to buy into that when there's plenty of video evidence and eyewitness accounts to the contrary. So, you know, that drives me crazy, just absolutely crazy, because this march has gone out of its way in every city to be totally and completely nonviolent. There was an article in Salon today, which actually it came out yesterday. It's dated October 17th. It's called Occupy Wall Street, Struggle for Nonviolence. And it's a good write-up. It says, an image of a protester apparently tackling a cop goes national despite the majority's commitment to nonviolence. And they did update it, by the way, but it's just to read a piece of it. It says, on Saturday, the Washington Post splashed a photo on its front page of an Occupy Wall Street protester apparently tackling a police officer during a march Friday morning in Lower Manhattan. The newspaper chose an image of a bearded protester seeming to assault a cop to illustrate a movement that has been overwhelmingly, almost without exception, nonviolent. It ran the photo above the story, Obama looks to harness anti-Wall Street angst. Critics of Occupy on the right have already seized on this photo, which, of course, they would. The author of this piece, his name is Justin Elliott. He goes on to say, after spending many days at Liberty Plaza in the past month and attending all the major Occupy marches in New York, I have encountered a very small minority of protesters who seem less than committed to the principle of nonviolence. But I have never seen anything like the sort of apparent assault on a police officer that is shown in this photograph. Neither, it turns out, has the photographer behind the image. The article goes on. The vast majority of the protests have been incredibly peaceful. I have been impressed with how peaceful the protests have been, New York-based freelancer Andrew Burton said, who took the photo for AP. It was Associated Press who took the photo of the protester allegedly tackling the white shirt. He said, why the man in the photo tackled the cop, I don't know. I do know it was a brief, rare moment of violence amidst weeks of peaceful protest. The photo was taken on a March Friday morning after a long, tense night in which protesters were preparing to be arrested en masse in Zuccotti Park, which we all know that whole story about, you know, cleaning the park and throwing them out. But it's a pretty good write-up. I suggest reading it. Links to everything that we discuss in the show today will be on my blog, leftwingnutjob.net, so that if it's something you want to follow up on, please go to my blog, and I will be more than happy to give you the links to all these different things. What this brings me into is something that's pretty much gone viral now, is a sergeant by the name of, he's retired from the military evidently, but his name is Sergeant Shamar Thomas. And Sergeant Thomas was one of the few people who actually took the opportunity to dress down the NYPD for their tactics, their police brutality tactics against the peaceful protesters. And for me, he says it all. It's very powerful. I'm going to play. It's going to kind of be hard to understand. It's on a YouTube video, which I will link to in, on my blog. But he was just pissed. And the interesting part is if you watch the video, it pans over to the NYPD who are surrounding him, and they just stand there speechless. They also did not arrest him, which brings me to the question, if it was just one of the dirty hippies, would they have arrested him? From Huffington Post, we get this information on Sergeant Jamar Thomas. It says he served with the 3rd Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion, USMC, in Iraq. Thomas, a New York native, then explains that his father served in Afghanistan, his mother served in Iraq, and that he doesn't like seeing cops hurting people that he and his family fought to protect. Also, Sergeant Thomas has released this statement for Huffington Post. I took an oath that I live by. I am not anti-NYPD. I am anti-police brutality. I am no longer under contract to the USMC, so I do not have to follow military uniform regulations. He was in uniform. I do not affiliate myself with any group or political organization. I affiliate myself with the American people, and that's it. I refuse to affiliate with anything that separates. There is an obvious problem in our country, and peaceful people should be allowed to protest without brutality. I was involved in a riot in Rutba, Iraq, 2004, and we did not treat the Iraqi citizens like they are treating the unarmed civilians in our own country. No one was brutalized because our mission there was to win the hearts and minds. Why should I expect anything less from my own country? To which I respond, speak it, brother, speak it. Anyway, here's Sergeant Thomas's rant and dressing down of the New York Police Department.
Have a good night, guys. You see it, baby. They don't lie.
Let's go.
They don't lie. They don't lie. They don't lie, tough guy. This is not a war zone. This is not a war zone. These are unarmed people. It doesn't make you tough to hurt these people. It doesn't make you tough to hurt these people. It doesn't. I don't care. I don't care about these people. I put in my work. It doesn't lie. It does not make you tough to hurt these people. There's nothing tough about it. Nothing. If you want to go fight, go to Iraq and Afghanistan. But you want to be here hurting U.S. citizens. Where is that in the contract? Where is that in the contract? Leave these people alone. They're U.S. citizens. U.S. citizens. U.S. citizens. U.S. It does not make you want to do this to them. It doesn't. Stop hurting these people, man. Why y'all do this to our people? I've been to Iraq 14 months for my people. You come over here and you hurt them. They don't have guns. They don't have guns. They don't. Why are you hurting these people? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Why do you sleep at night? There is no honor in this. There is no honor in this. There is no honor in this, man. There's no honor in this shit. There is no honor in this shit. There is no honor in what you're doing. These people, no honor. How you do this to people? How you do this to people? How you sleep at night doing this to people? How you do this to people? How? You're here to protect them. You're here to protect us. Protect us. Why are you hurting U.S. citizens? This is the United States of America. Why are you hurting people? If you want to go kill and hurt people, go to Iraq. Why are you hurting U.S. citizens? Why? What sense does it make? Do you get honor out of this? Do you get honor out of hitting people with batons? Is that what you get?
No.
Why are you doing this?
Let's not stop here. We got to walk down a block over another place.
We're just trying to move your block.
If this is unbelievable, that y'all are doing this to people. That y'all are doing this to people.
Come on. Let's go. Why are y'all doing this to people? Now, I know that everybody's not bad. Why are y'all doing this to people? Y'all walk around in riot gear like this is a war. These people don't have guns. How can I make that crazy when y'all are hurting people that I protected? My whole family protected this country. I understand, but I'm not out here trying to hurt these people. I'm not walking around trying to hurt
people. Your history doesn't.
I was in Iraq with you.
So why do you allow this? Why are they walking around trying to hurt people?
Let's go, folks.
Keep walking.
Please, I'm asking you nicely. Let's walk down the block, please.
And I can't speak. Y'all want to shut me up. Y'all want to shut me up. Why are y'all walking like there's a war going on? Nobody has guns. Why are y'all treating people like this? This is America. Why are y'all treating people like this? Why are y'all gearing up like this is war?
Guys,
this is not war.
Let's go, folks. We can now.
This is not war. Why are y'all acting like this? No one has guns. It takes a tough guy to act like this.
Without
guns. Nobody's trying to hurt you guys. There are no bullets flying out here. There are no bullets flying. How tough are you? How tough are you?
There's no honor in hurting unarmed civilians. You get no respect.
What did you see tonight that bothered you?
I was here October 5th. I saw them beating people that had nothing to do with anything, just grabbing people out of the crowd. There's no honor in that. My mom, my father, everybody has served in Iraq, Afghanistan war. I did 14 months in Iraq. My father was in Afghanistan. My mother did a year in Iraq. We fought for this country. I don't come home. I'm in New York City. I am from New York City. And these cops are hurting people that I fought to protect. There's no reason for this. There's no honor in hurting unarmed civilians. And I won't let it happen. Have a good night.
Yeah!
Sergeant Shamar Thomas, from New York.
President.
Huh? Oh, I don't know what they're doing. They walked away. They're scared.
Hurrah!
And that was my new hero, Sergeant Shamar Thomas, who has served his time in Iraq, whose mom and dad served in the military over in our forever wars. And God bless him. I know some of you don't believe in God, and that's fine too, but Buddha can bless him then. I just think it's great that he did that. And I do like to also add that I come from a long line of law enforcement family, and I firmly believe that the vast majority of the police officers are good and just individuals. But the problem is that it only takes a couple of these idiots to trash the reputation of an entire police force. And that's what makes me angry and very fucking sad. Like I said, Johnny and Deputy Inspector Johnny Cardona has already been nailed video-wise and first-person-wise for trying to incite the rioters on two separate occasions already within the last few weeks. And from my point of view, that's the only thing that these cops are trying to do, is they are trying to incite the rioters to get ugly and to get violent. And like I said, Washington Post glommed on to that picture of the one rider tackling a police officer. They don't give any backstory as to why he did it. If the police officer had just pepper sprayed somebody or sucker punched somebody, you know, I just can't find it in my heart to think that out of nowhere that protester just went batshit crazy and attacked a police officer. You have to. When it's drilled into your head at these marches that it's nonviolent, you just aren't just going to go nuts like that. You aren't. You know, even Naomi Klein has said, something else about this movement is that they're doing right is you have committed yourselves to nonviolence. You have refused to give the media the images of broken windows and street fights it craves so desperately. And that tremendous discipline has meant that again and again, the story has been disgraceful and unprovoked and police brutality. And it is on most, I'd say most, if not all occasions, totally unprovoked. That's why it bothers me. I mean, if you remember the WTO protests in Seattle a couple years back, there was a ton of vandalism. That's what the corporate media glommed onto was the small number of protesters that were vandalizing and being violent. And it just, you know, it's just another reason why the corporate media is not on our side. They're out there to make the OWS movement look like a bunch of dirty hippies, and they're praying that it becomes violent somewhere, somehow, so that, you know, they can rationalize it in their own little minds, you know, with the fact that everybody's, you know, everybody's just a jerk, they don't know what they're doing, and they're all violent people. I think what I'm going to go into now is a piece that I uploaded that, speaking of right-wing nut jobs, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Chris Hedges recently debated on Canadian broadcasting an idiot that is known by the name of Kevin O'Leary. I'm going to give you a little backstory on Kevin. Kevin likes to call himself a venture capitalist, and he runs a couple of hedge funds. I like to refer to those guys as vulture capitalists, like Mitt Romney. They buy up companies, tear them into little pieces, and sell them off. And then hundreds of people lose their jobs. But you know, the vulture capitalists make a ton of money on it. What's pretty interesting about Mr. O'Leary is that he's not even really good at what he does. From a Time magazine write-up, which I will have a link to on my site, O'Leary's real-life business performance is spotty. All four of the funds run by O'Leary's asset management company are trailing the market this year. Shares of the company's oldest fund, O'Leary Global Equity Income Fund, which was launched in 2008, have plunged nearly 24% in the past year. Next, there is the truth in advertising problem. O'Leary calls himself an ecopreneur, but many of the fund's investments are in coal companies and other large polluters. And O'Leary's fund's representatives declined comment on the performance of the fund. So this guy's basically a jerkwad, and Chris Hedges doesn't suffer fools very easily, and he thought he was going on a show that, you know, would have some equal give and take between him and Mr. O'Leary about the Occupy movement, and it turned out to be basically that Kevin O'Leary is the Canadian transplant from Fox Noise. So let me go ahead. What I'm going to play for you is Sank on Young Turks. He plays the it was a very short interview because Hedges wasn't going to put up with this asshole, and Sank interjects in between pieces of the interview what he thinks about the entire thing. So this is a Sank on a debate that took place on CBC between the Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Chris Hedges and the idiot entrepreneur the idiot vulture capitalist Kevin O'Leary. Here it goes.
Chris Hedges is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. He's going to go on CBC here, so you would expect on Canadian television that it'd be fair and decent reporting, right? But he's got a guy named Kevin O'Leary who's apparently not in that camp. Look, he's got an opinion. I got an opinion. I hear you. He does a very aggressive interview here. I'm not sure it was the right format for it, but understand Kevin O'Leary in the past is the guy who says that the unions should be illegal and that their members should be put in jail. So that's where he's coming from, and you're going to be able to tell right away in the beginning of this interview. Watch this confrontation.
So what exactly is everybody complaining about? And is, to also give me a sense of how much momentum this movement has, because it looks pretty nothing burgers so far. just a few guys, guitars, nobody knows what they want. They can't even name the names of the firms that they're protesting against. Very weak, low budget.
I wouldn't agree with that assessment at all. They pulled thousands of people into the street last night. Here in Washington, when everybody marched past Bank of America, they knew they were shouting, shame, shame, shame. They know the names of these firms, and they know what these firms have done, not only to the American economy, but to the global economy and the criminal class who runs them.
Oh, I love that. So since they don't have a lot of money, well, then they must be wrong. You missed the whole point of the protest. They're protesting the people with all the money controlling our government. He's like, oh, well, if they don't have money, they must be a nothing burger. Okay, and then Chris Hedges comes in and goes, they know exactly what they're talking about. Of course they do. They're protesting people like you who want to hand over all the power to the banks and not give any of us a representative government. So Chris Hedges is going to explain it a little bit better here.
They know precisely what they want. They want to reverse the corporate coup that's taken place in the United States and render the citizenry impotent. And they won't stop until that happens. And frankly, if we don't break the back of corporations, we're all finished anyway, since they're rapidly trashing the ecosystem on which the human species depends for survival. This is literally a fight for life. It's that grave, it's that serious. Corporations, unfettered capitalism, as Karl Marx understood, is a revolutionary force. It commodifies everything, human beings, the natural world, which it exploits for profit until exhaustion or collapse. And the bottom line is we don't have much time left. We are on the cusp of perhaps another major banking crisis in Europe, defaults in Greece, followed by Spain, Portugal. There's been no restrictions, no regulations of Wall Street. They've looted the U.S. Treasury. They've played all the games that they were playing before, and we're about to pay for it all over again.
See, there it is. How simple was that? He's worried about a corporate coup taking over our government. How many times do we have to explain it to you? It isn't that there are corporations or that there are banks. The problem is that they have run away and bought all of our politicians through their funding and twisted all the rules to gain an unfair advantage. That's what we're all worried about. But apparently O'Leary's a little too thick to get it. But you want to talk about not getting it. Look at what O'Leary says next.
Listen, don't take this the wrong way, but you sound like a left-wing nut bar. If you want to shut down every corporation, every bank, where are you going to get a job? Where are you going to work? Where's the economy going to go?
Corporations don't produce anything. And
Really?
No.
Financial
corporations on Wall Street.
Are you driving a car to the protest?
No. They are speculators. I'm talking about the financial institutions like Goldman Sachs. They don't manufacture. They don't make anything. They gamble. They use money, and they believe falsely that money is real. As we dismantle our manufacturing base and send jobs over the border to Mexico and finally into the embrace of China.
Left-wing nut bar. That had to be my favorite. I wonder what I am. I don't know if I'm a whole left-wing cake. I don't know. So he's like, whoa, what? I'm just doing an interview here. You left-wing nut bar? You're a nothing burger. What? Did I say something offensive? I was just asking questions. So, again, for the millionth time, it's not that they're against all corporations. Is Kevin O'Leary really that dumb? Or does he think, like, I'll trick the audience by thinking that these people want no business whatsoever. We want to shut down all the businesses in the country and in all of North America. Absurd.
I don't usually go on shows where people descend to character assassination. If you want to discuss issues, that's fine. But, I mean, this sounds like Fox News, and I don't go on Fox News. I mean, either you discuss the issues, and look, you have had very eloquent writers, people like John Ralston Saul in Canada, who have laid this out with, you know, incredible lucidity, and to somehow attack this critique by calling someone a nutcase engages in the kind of trash talk that's polluted the corporate airways.
Excuse me, let's debate the issues then.
You were the one who started it.
I didn't call you a nutcase. I called you a nut
bar. You said
bar,
you sounded
right?
Like a left-wing nutcase.
Yes, bar.
Okay,
nut
that's
bar.
An insult.
Are you left-wing and leaning at least, would you say?
No, I would say that...
You're a centrist?
Can I finish?
Please.
What do you think? Has this been a little antagonistic? Of course! Obviously it's antagonistic. But Chris Hedges is going to give him a little bit of truth here.
Okay, but you don't see any value in the banking system providing a financial infrastructure.
That's not what I said.
I'm asking you.
A banking system that functions as a banking system should. And in Canada, you do not have a banking crisis because you did not tear down the walls between commercial and investment banks and turn all of your banks into hedge funds. If instead of handing massive sums of money to Citibank, Wells Fargo, which are basically zombie banks, they still hold tremendous toxic assets, instead they're just sitting on the capital and not lending it.
Well, that was my favorite part of what Chris said, because what a great irony there. Because in Canada, the banks are very tightly regulated. The reason that they have been sound and safe and why there aren't tremendous protests in Canada over an out-of-control banking system is that they regulate the risk, how much risk they can take, and most importantly, they separate out customers' money from investment banking speculative trading that the banks are doing. So they can't speculate with your money. That's what Canada is doing right, and what the U.S. is doing wrong. And
Whoops, I'm sorry, I was cut a little short. I didn't realize that it was that short. Anyway, if you listen closely, Chris Hedges puts a lot of great points out there about our whole financial industry and how fucked up it is and how little regulation we have compared to another big country like Canada, who totally keeps those guys in line. One of the things that Obama did when he gave them all their bailouts was he allowed them to go from being a financial institution into calling themselves a quote-unquote bank, which gives them, you know, free rein to do anything they want and to, you know, run their casinos legally now and actually call themselves a bank. And they get all the lovely little perks that being a bank gets, like the FDIC covers all of the the money that people put in the bank, which brings me to another point. Late this weekend, people went into Citibank and tried to withdraw their money, and the lovely people at Citibank said, "Oh no, we're not going to have any of this," and so they closed the doors and they started to arrest people who were actually patrons of the bank who wanted to close their bank accounts. I mean, I don't know how they get away with that crap. That's total bullshit. They were in there doing banking business, but it was making the bank look bad. And since Jamie Dimon and everybody else on Wall Street it appears to have bought off the NYPD, the NYPD was not protecting the citizens or the banking customers. They were protecting the bank's ass. So, you know, that's just another part of the bullshit that's been going on in New York City. And, you know, that's the kind of crap that would incite most people. I know it pissed me the hell off, you know, to get angry and to get violent. You know, I mean, they arrested 24 people at that Citibank branch near Manhattan's Washington Square Park. Most of them were detained for trespassing after they supposedly ignored a request by the bank to leave. They were there to do banking business. Yes, they might have been protesters, but they were also bank customers. And that's the part that's total bullshit. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that the corporate media isn't playing up, that they don't bring up. You know, they just sit there and say, "Oh, well, look, all these dirty hippies came into the bank and made life a living hell for everybody else that was there." And it just really drives me friggin' insane when I don't see anything in the corporate media about it, and you have to go to the alternative media in order to get information on that kind of activity by the cops. Once again, to go back to the whole Washington Post front page picture, it really bothers me that that the Washington Post has turned, which they've always been a corporate media conglomerate. They've never been anything but for them to just, get wet their panties over the fact that, "Oh, look, we've got a protester getting violent," without giving any kind of backstory as to why he was getting violent or what happened prior to that, It's just absolute bullshit. Even in Mexico City, there was a few hundred protesters down in Mexico that that protested this weekend. They were gathered under a stone monument. It's called the Revolution Monument. That's great. The border city of Tijuana, which, since I'm a California native, I've been there. That's one of the most disgusting, horrible places in the world for people to live. There were 100 protesters down there gathered in the banking district. And that included many university students who were protesting the fact that there were lack of jobs for graduates, which is exactly what's happening here. One of the protesters who got arrested in the Citibank bullshit was Lily Polina. She's 29 years old. Yes, she's an organizer with the United Auto Workers Union. And she said she was there taking her money out because she was upset with J.P. Morgan Chase that they were making billions while customers struggle with bank fees and home foreclosures. But they arrested her because she wouldn't leave when they told her to leave. But she was there doing business. You know, so what are you going to do when, you know, the deck is stacked against these guys? And you got to give them props because they're still maintaining the fact that we're not violent. Our message is clear. We're tired of the status quo. And this brings me to a good article on The Nation that was written up yesterday. It's called Rediscovering Civil Disobedience, and it's the author is George Gohl, G-O-E-H-L. He starts out his article by quoting Martin Luther King, I believe. It says, "There comes a time when silence becomes betrayal," proclaimed Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, as he took a risk and spoke out forcefully against the war in Vietnam. The article goes on, "As more Americans debate whether to leave the sidelines and join the Occupy Wall Street movement, we should heed Dr. King's words. Our individual silence is a form of acquiescence, and we speak volumes not only through our action but also through our lack of it. Silence signals that we are okay with what's happening, or that we have simply given up. While Occupy Wall Street has inspired a new level of consciousness in America, we have only just scratched the surface." And that's something that we all have to remember, too, is this is still a baby. This is still a baby movement. No matter how impatient people get and how much they want this thing to, you know, get into something where everything's very concrete, it's happening at its own pace. The article goes on to say, "A few activists new to the struggle, as well as those who have been hitting the streets since the financial crisis began, this may mean taking on new risks." Then he goes on to speak about Dr. King. "As he spoke from the pulpit of Riverside Church in 1967, Dr. King said, 'The truth of these words is beyond doubt, but the mission to which they call us is a most difficult one. Breaking silence entails risk because it means facing one's fear of ridicule, embarrassment, failure, and more. It is easier and safer to remain silent. But as we've seen over the last few years, our collective silence has come with its own set of costs in the form of lost jobs, homes, and pensions.'" Jesus Christ, can that be more true today than it was back in 1967? I'll go back to the article. "Last Tuesday, members of Southsiders organized for Unity and Liberation," their moniker is SOUL, "an affiliate of National People's Action, the community organizing network that I direct, took their risk-taking to the next level with personal courage born of outrage. 16 members of SOUL, supported by 150 witnesses, were arrested at the annual convention of the Mortgage Bankers of America as they called on the big banks to reduce principal on millions of underwater home loans and pay their fair share of taxes, which we know they don't. The action was part of a series of events organized by Take Back Chicago." The article goes on, "The big banks have completely disrupted life in our community," says Will Tansman, co-executive director of SOUL, which is based in Chicago's South Side. "They have created a full-on crisis for the families who have been forced from their homes and for neighbors stuck living next to the scores of bank-owned foreclosed properties on each block. They have repeatedly ignored our pleas to put a halt to the foreclosure crisis, and that is why we called to them to bring, and that is why we were called to bring the crisis to them. It's a really good read. I suggest it. Like I said, I'll have a link to it on my website. The whole point is that that we're at a critical stage, you know, now, because the cops are trying so hard to egg these guys on because they're getting tired of being there every day and 24/7. You know, they have to go back to the whole nonviolent civil disobedience that was so central to Dr. King's work, as the article states. We are at a critical stage in America where corporate greed has taken over, says Ms. Smith. Right now, we are under the soles of the shoes of Wall Street, and if we want to change that, we have to take risks. For me, this act of civil disobedience was done on behalf of my faith, my family, and my community. Thanks to so many people like Ms. Smith who have taken to the streets over the last few weeks, many more are joining the fight to create a more just and sustainable economy. But getting there won't be easy, and it won't be comfortable. With yesterday's dedication of the Martin Luther King Jr.'s National Memorial, we should consider how and when each of us will break our silence and turn up the volume. Oh, goody, we have a caller. Let me bring him in here. Hello, caller at 414. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Dusty. This is ZRM.
Who is this?
ZRM, Zombalicious.
Hi, how you doing, Zombie?
I'm doing great.
Zombie runs a blog called Empire of the Senseless. It's a great read. It's funny sometimes, and it's very serious. He lives in Wisconsin, and he gives us a lot of 411 on all the fuckery going on in Wisconsin by Scotty Walker and his henchmen. So how's it going?
And sometimes
there?
I just rattle on about the Mekons.
Yes, you do.
I wanted to comment about the Citibank thing where folks who were customers were being arrested for being customers.
Exactly.
You commented on my blog about that, and I came back, and I understand you're very angry about that, and I came back and I kind of said that I thought it was absolutely hilarious. I think it's an incredible misstep on the part of the banks.
Exactly, it is.
Even as you say, nobody's paying attention to it yet. It is percolating through the internet, and they underestimate how much of that stuff kind of goes on behind the scenes until it crops up. And it really does point out that these banks have gotten to the point they feel like they're untouchable, and they really do believe that they are entitled to all of our money.
And that's the sick part. And they get, and not only our money. As customers, but our money as tax holders, as taxpayers.
Right, on both ends, absolutely, yeah.
And that drives me nuts more than anything, I think, is that they really felt that they were entitled to that bailout, and now they're sitting on billions of dollars that they refused to loan to small businesses that could actually...
I don't mean to be a pedant about this, but actually it's trillions of dollars.
Okay, you're right, honey.
It's over $2 trillion right now they're sitting on.
No, you're right. Trillions.
Which, which of course, leaves me sitting bereft, because as we know, I work related to the construction industry, and nobody builds anything for cash anymore. Everybody needs a loan, and if nobody can get a loan from a bank, nobody builds anything. And
you and my son are in the same boat, because he's in construction as well.
Yeah. My brother was in construction. He got out of it because he was laid off for so long. He's now doing auto body repair.
Oh, that's sad.
I think he likes it better, actually, than plumbing, but even if it's not as much money. But getting back to the bank industry, I just read an interesting quote over at Sadly No that I think gets to the heart of the bank's problems. And I think some of them do realize it. The quote said, if you owe a bank $1,000, you've got a problem. If you owe a bank $1,000,000, the bank has a problem.
That is a good one.
There's a lot of money owed to banks, and if we go on a bank strike and nobody wants to pay them back, the bank has the problem, not us. They can't put 50 million people in jail for not paying their bank loans.
And that's slowly happening as the recession deepens. People are just having to figure out what they're going to – are you going to buy food for your kids, or are you going to pay your bank loan?
Right, right. Food and medicine and housing comes before credit cards, no matter how much they want to try and penalize people with debtor's prisons.
No, you're right. That's the scary part, and there's times when you irritate me, but I do love the fact that, because I'm so serious in my blogging about this, and you always take it to heart, like you said, you think it's hilarious, and we need those two types of viewpoints. You know, you're 180. We have the same belief. We just look at it from different angles, and so I think that's really healthy. I think you help me a lot when my blood pressure starts, you know, topping out, and I read something from you about why you think it's funny. It really does help bring me back down to earth and solidify me. So I really want to thank you for that, and I'm just so glad that you called in. Have you participated in any of the marches up in your area yet?
I haven't yet. I've become extraordinarily busy.
Well, that's good.
There was one. It's not necessarily paying stuff, but at least it keeps me distracted.
Yes, because Zombie is an architect. Zombie is an architect who spent, you know, a zillion years in college honing his craft, only to get out and find out that he was screwed. You know, he's one of the kids that, you know, do you have a ton of school loans you're trying to pay back?
No, I'm older than that.
Oh, okay.
So I did have a fair amount of loan money, but it wasn't the magnitude that kids have nowadays. And it was at a lower percentage rate because that was when they were still coming from the feds rather than private banks. So
nowadays they're so screwed it isn't even funny. It's disgusting the rates kids are paying.
Yeah, they privatized the student loans, but they guaranteed them on the federal side, so banks have no risk for student loans, but they can charge bank rates for them.
Exactly.
So it was one of those things where they privatized it and it made it worse for everybody except the banks.
Yes, once again, they privatized something and it just hosed everybody, and that's the way our government's been going now since the Iraq War. Everything gets privatized.
Yeah, well, except for a fair number of military folks, you know, who they still have to put their own bodies on the line. It's not a private contractor.
No, but I've read that there's almost as many contractors in Iraq and Gap and Afghanistan as there is military personnel.
I believe that. Especially with the reduction of troop numbers.
They get paid three times better than our soldiers do.
and there's no oversight on them. There's no responsibility. They can do anything. And my favorite story is, of course, when Halliburton was building barracks for all the actual volunteer soldiers, and they had messed up the electrical system to the point that people were being incapacitated with electrical shocks when they took showers.
Oh, yeah. It was killed a few people.
Right, right. And that's one of those things, you know, this is what gets me irate, and I can't laugh about it so much because my industry has a fair amount of regulation, and part of my responsibility as an architect is to be knowledgeable about building codes, know how to build a building safely and detail it safely. And in most cases, it becomes a collaborative process with the contractors and the building inspectors and plan examiners and all like that. Nobody's trying to score points by saying you're wrong about this. What we're all trying to do is to come up with a final product that's going to be safe and structurally sound for the people who use it. And Halliburton goes over to Iraq, and there's no oversight, there's no regulation, and they build however they want, and people die. And that's what happens in the building industry if there aren't building codes. most of the major code revisions, and NB over at you know NB, of course, at Distant Voices. He's an engineer in New York. He'll talk about the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire as being the impetus that for the first fire safety codes in the country. Massive disasters like that, tragedies like that, have always moved the building codes forward. Now we're to the point where we do have pretty extensive building codes, but the buildings that are built using them are as safe as we can get. I mean,
exactly.
You can always build things heavier, but eventually the cost doesn't bear out.
And that is a great blog of Ned's. It's, what's the name? Distant Voices, Vibrating Electrons. It's a
That's
great blog written from a perspective of somebody that knows what he's talking about. I really enjoy his blog too.
Except when he starts bad mouthing architects.
Yes, except when he starts bad mouthing or software people. I got into it with him about software people, but. As far as, do you believe, are you a supporter of the OWS movement?
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
I mean, actually, yes, and I do support the guy who shit on the cop car, too.
Oh, yeah, because the thing is with the cops, the cops are the 99%ers, and the vast majority of them are good and just individuals. Most of the ones that have been... and assholes are the white shirts, which are actually supervisors that should know better.
Yeah, and I think you were touching on that earlier too. I do think that there are several of them who are Tea Party types, especially the middle management types, and
mm-hmm.
they would love to see the thing get out of. They would love to push it over the edge into rioting, into something out of control.
And I think that's what they're trying to do. I really think that's what they're trying to do. B4, you know him. I'm sorry.
Of course, not all of them. There are plenty of very diligent, good cops.
Oh yeah.
No,
I totally agree. And then you know, big bad bald bastard, our friend that blogs under that name. He lives in New York City, and he put a really good quote on one of my blog posts that I told him I was going to quote today if I can get my ass over there and find it. He said that the amount of money that New York City is spending, I'm trying to find it as I jerk around here, that New York is, I can't find it. Where did he put it? He said the amount of money that they're spending is just outrageous. It's in the millions of dollars already on police, on cops, you know, to police these nonviolent folks. And, let me see. I think I'm at, here it is. Oh, here it is. It's pretty horrible when the police are the ones who are acting unlawfully. Hell, NYC could save millions if there were less of a police presence. And then he says, I love this comment at the Daily News. They've already spent $2 million just in overtime and counting. And then this was a quote that big bad bald bastard found on a New York News website on the article. 2 million, really? Then send the fascist white shirts home and stop trying to provoke and wrongfully arrest peaceful demonstrators against this kind of waste, fraud, and abuse. Police are there to protect the innocent, i.e. the 99%, not the guilty, i.e. the 1%, the banksters, or to simply stay out of it if they don't want to have the balls to arrest the real perps here. Problem solved. On to the next problem. And, I think that's a great quote, and that was just by somebody that was commenting on the New York Times, the New York Daily News article on the $2 million plus that's been spent on overtime already. So, you know, and I did say earlier, I come from a long line of law enforcement family members, and by and large, I always support the law enforcement officers. They're all good people. They're just like everybody else. They just wear a badge, and most of them are very good people, but it's just when you get the people like in middle management with the white shirts who, let's turn this into a violent event so we can crack some heads and send them all home, which is what I really believe is their true goal.
Yeah, I think you're definitely seeing that. Although in L.A., And in Milwaukee, when we had Occupy protests, and of course they're not as long term as what's going on in New York, so the stress level isn't as high. But I know in LA, the organizers talked to the police prior to the protest to make sure they understood it was going to be peaceful and that there was going to be a chain of command if something did go wrong. And both of them went off without a problem. In fact, in LA, the city council drafted a resolution in support of the protest.
Yes, they did.
And passed it unanimously.
And they also got permits. I think a lot of the LA ones got permits, whereas the New York one I think they've gotten one permit for everything they've done so far. That's it. And a permit doesn't do anything except give the city more money, and it gives you a little bit more validity, you know, to occupy that space, whereas it should, the First Amendment gives us that right anyway.
Yeah, I don't know how that worked down here in Milwaukee, but of course Milwaukee has a socialist history,
Milwaukee. In fact, after when you and I are done, I'm going to play Russ Feingold's opinion on Occupy Wall Street, because he discussed it lately with Keith Olbermann, and he's always been one of my big heroes. I'm just really sad that he got voted out of office in 2010. He doesn't seem to regret it, but he was one of the...
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, he said he didn't.
No, I think he felt like maybe at this point he was beating his head against a wall, and maybe there was a different avenue that would be more productive. He's definitely, definitively, definitively turned down the opportunity to run for governor, which is another something to be sad about He's always been high on the list. He's always been high on the list to be a candidate, and in hypothetical polling, he's been way on top of Scott Walker. But he said, "No, I'm not doing it."
And off topic, he said that the recall Scott movement is going to start in November.
Yes, yeah, because if they start in November, they can have the signatures in hand in January, which is when he becomes eligible for recall.
So they don't have to miss the boat. They can slap that crap right on City Hall the day that he can go up for recall. I love it.
Yeah, as I recall, I think we're in the neighborhood of 570,000 signatures to force a recall, which is shouldn't be too hard in Wisconsin, which has 5 or 6 million people. With the recent, I actually think Occupy Wall Street is helping the recall effort because it's keeping these issues on a front burner.
Yeah.
So people will keep thinking about it. Speaking of the lovely Wisconsin politics I'm living through, Thunder had a lovely little update on that he linked to on my blog regarding one of our booted Republican senators from the last wave of recalls over summer.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Kopenke, who was forcibly retired, was arrested just a couple over the weekend. Apparently he decided that now that he was unable to damage Wisconsinites through the legislative process, he was going to go take it a personal approach. And he was driving drunk, weaving in an SUV all over the road.
Oh, God bless
his
dumbass. Thunder's blog is great. He's such a mellow guy. He always has such wonderful, beautiful pictures up of his butterflies and his flowers. But he can put up some really hard-hitting stuff about politics. And he leaves, because I give him the window, he leaves some really hard-hitting comments on all my political posts. So
he knows
the score. He seems like a mellow guy on the outside. I think on the inside he's got a crowbar and a 45, and he's ready to use it.
he's an interesting guy he has 1 foot in the hippie camp because he's an older guy, but then he spent a lot of time in New York, so he's also got 1 foot in the punk camp. So he kind of spans those extremes there. You probably realize this, but one of the reasons he does the butterflies and flower pictures is as self-therapy, because he's been unemployed since January.
I know. He's one of the 99%ers. He's the original meaning of the word. You know, he's been unemployed for over 99 months or whatever. There's too many of us that are in that. Not me. I'm disabled. But, you know, that's the whole point of this movement is, you know, people are just, you know, the banks are getting fat and rich and we can't even survive. You know, we got to decide between medicine and food and paying in mortgages. That's complete bullshit.
I'm not going to argue with the air.
I know. But I'm so glad you called in. I really, really appreciate it. I do the show every Tuesday if you don't have anything to do. It's always going to be about Occupy Wall Street, but we're always going to try to put a different spin on it and bring up different things. So I hope you'll call back next week.
I will see. Like I said, I have some work to do. It's not going to pay out until February or something like that, but at least it's something to do. And there might be money involved in the future.
Well, I hope so, honey. You keep on keeping on, and thank you very much for calling in. I'm going to go ahead now and play Feingold's views on Occupy Wall Street with Keith Olbermann on his show last week. So you take care, and thank you for calling, sweetheart.
Awesome. Thanks, Dusty. Good luck.
Former United States Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin is currently out of office, but hardly out of the political picture. And on our number one story on the countdown, Feingold added his influential voice to the Occupy Wall Street movement over the weekend as it spread to his state's capital city with Occupy Madison. Mr. Feingold said, "People have a limit. How long can you rip people off before they start responding?" Feingold now leads a group called Progressives United. Last winter, he supported public workers against the radical union busting of Republican Governor Scott Walker. The current protests in Madison do not have the numbers and energy yet of what happened last winter. As Feingold put it yesterday, "We didn't invent protesting in Wisconsin, but we took it to a new level." As promised, Russ Feingold, former U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, co-author of McCain-Feingold, and founder of Progressives United. Good to talk to you, sir.
Keith, wonderful to be on your show.
How far do you think this can go, and what is essentially the there has to be a political endgame to it at some point. What's the process by which it causes change to be enacted?
Well, I think this can go very far, and I think it will. What I like to say is by the time this thing is done, it's going to make the Tea Party look like a Tea Party. it will be very extensive. And the reason is the crimes against the working people of this country have mounted up, and people have finally realized they can't stop. They have to actually deal with it. They can't just take it. And it's obviously the Wall Street abuses keep going, the protection of the very wealthy, that they don't have to participate in trying to deal with our deficit problems, the complete domination of the political process by unlimited secret contributions, the shipping of our jobs overseas through lousy trade agreements while at the same time taking away the collective bargaining rights of public employees. You know, it's finally reached the point where people are saying, that's it, we are tired of being ripped off, and they're responding. And I think once that's unleashed, it keeps going.
Was there a tipping point? You mentioned so many different things that certainly contributed to this. Was it in fact, did this ball start really rolling in that one direction with the thing that your group, Progressives United, so vehemently opposes, the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court about a year and a half ago?
Well, I mean, obviously it's a combination of factors. One is the economy being in terrible shape and not rebounding, and then these Tea Party people pretend that they're going to try to solve the problem, but they come into office and they essentially help make the deficit worse by not having wealthy people participate in solving the problem. They're actually for less regulation of Wall Street, and the Republicans are. And all of a sudden, people realize they're not going to get reform at all. Then they understand that much of this is being financed. It took a while before it was implemented. It took a while before people saw it happening. They realize that this is being financed through huge contributions from corporations. The Koch brothers, you know, helped finance this awful attack on working people in Wisconsin. So the evidence finally mounted. Got college students that are graduating after having had, you know, loans over the years. They're not getting any jobs. And finally, you know, how long can people be made fools of? And they're saying, wait a minute, we have no alternative. The government isn't solving this problem. We're going to start protesting. And I'm just very excited that that's starting to happen.
Bernie Sanders came out quickly in support of this. I've already mentioned that this evening, and John Lewis did too, and Minority Leader Pelosi was pretty strong over the weekend too, and there have been others. But where are the other leading liberals and Democrats? Do you have a sense that people are still hanging back, and what's going to get them to stop doing so?
This is no time to hang back. One of the biggest problems Democrats have is that they forget the power and the passion that the base of the party has. And actually, this is well beyond the Democratic Party. These are just working people all over the country, or people who want to work, who have just had it. To not understand the power of that kind of populism, to not encourage it, to not embrace it, is a huge mistake. This is not a time for cautious politics. This is not a time for saying, well, we better just go a little bit this way or that way. This is a time to fundamentally identify the crooked way this country is being run, the corruption of Wall Street, the ridiculous notion that very wealthy people are basically saying they shouldn't have to help us solve our problems. Mm-hmm. It's time to take it up a few notches. And I think every office holder and every leader in the country should say thank you to the people who are out there protesting.
If the if some liberals and even more Democrats are not active, certainly the opponents of Occupy Wall Street and the related Occupy movements are as active as anything. There've been suggestions that this always leads to the guillotine or Chairman Mao or whatever else has been said, the nonsense that's been said in response to it. But even Paul Krugman wrote in the New York Times today that the plutocrats are panicking. Is that your sense as well? And do they in fact have good reason to
yes.
do so?
Yeah, and let's face it, sometimes it's even Democrats who are part of this money system, and so there's some nervousness, especially on the Republican side, certainly on Wall Street and Washington where the power structure is. My observation is they're very nervous that this might work. What sort of set me off on this, Keith, was making the mistake of watching Fox News in the morning the other day mm-hmm. and watching these people, Varney and the others, mocking the protesters, making fun of the way they were dressed, saying they didn't have, you know, a precise agenda, to which I said, you know, they're not filing briefs at the Supreme Court. They're upset. Mm-hmm. And so my sense is that there is great fear that this sweet deal that a lot of these people have in both Washington and New York, this unholy alliance between our government and our media and the financial markets and the financial businesses, that this unholy alliance is finally being threatened and challenged. It is a threat and an attack on every working American, and it's time that we upset the apple cart. And I think they are nervous, and they know this has great potential.
All right, how do we upset the apple cart without you in office? And I don't mean that as to blow smoke anywhere, but quite seriously, everybody who's ever stood up for something needs to be on board. I'm not criticizing you for not being in office, but when will we see that happen again?
Well, look, being in office is not what it's all about. Obviously, it's one way to do it. I did that for 28 years. But to me, what we're dealing with here is a situation where Congress can't even vote to overturn Citizens United. You can't do that. The only way to do it is a mass public movement to make it very clear that this Supreme Court decision has to be overturned, that it is a direct attack on our democracy. So this goes beyond electoral politics and who's in office and who isn't. It's much more fundamental. And everybody in or out of office has to work together to try to turn this thing around. So that's where I'm focused on right now. And frankly, I like the freedom to be able to particularly focus on this issue. There were many other great issues when I was in the Senate. But this is the big overriding issue. This is what's destroying our democracy, Keith, as you know as well as anybody. Unlimited corporate contributions have to be stopped.
Okay. Russ Feingold, former senator for Wisconsin. Our great thanks for your service, sir, and for your time tonight.
Thanks so much, Keith.
That's Countdown for Monday, 393 days till the 2012 presidential election. I'm Keith Olbermann.
And that was Russ Feingold talking last week to Keith Olbermann on his show Countdown. I was hoping somebody else would call in. Come on, you people, you're sitting in there. Give me a call. I really appreciate it. Our call-in number is 213-816-0357. The show is being brought to you daily by Roundtree7.com. of which I am a writer. That's the number 7. Gwen Berry, this is her show. I sit in for her every Tuesday so she can get some work done, because she's actually a small business owner who's trying to support the Occupy Wall Street movement and make some money and run her business at the same time. So I try to give her a breather. There's other writers that will occasionally sit in for her as well, but like most people, they're out there trying to make a buck and feed their families and pay their mortgages. So, you know, it's usually Gwen's sitting here five to six days a week supporting the movement, and I try to spell her on Tuesdays. One of the other things I was going to, I spoke about Naomi Klein earlier because I really think that she's one of the best voices that we have on the left that can verbalize what's going on and why. And I'm going to play a short piece that's labeled here Naomi Klein on MSC after Occupy Wall Street. So let's see what this has to say.
About it. Which side of this argument do you fall on?
Wait a minute. We have a caller. Hold on. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi
yes,
there.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, well, that's always good. How's your back?
Oh, it's hanging in there. Every time somebody calls in, I get to stand up and move around, so I love it when we get a caller.
I see. Well, this is your old internet pal, M. Bouffant.
Bouffant! How are you doing, honey? He's got a great blog that's called Just Another Blog from L.A. It's a good read. He puts stuff up there all day. He's kind of snarky, but I really enjoy it.
No, I'm hateful and cynical, please. Don't
well, you can say that. I was trying to clean it up for you a bit, but yes, you are cynical.
Well, you can't hide it, so. Well, I don't know what to say. I don't think anyone mentioned about the footage of the white shirt kind of just hauling off and smacking a woman and knocking her to the ground that appeared maybe late last week somewhere.
No, I mentioned that jerkwad. I mentioned him at the beginning of the show. He's already got two incidents on video. That was the first one.
I won't go on with your law enforcement background and all that because you might send someone over to beat me with a stick.
No. I'm the black sheep of the family, baby. They all think I'm batshit crazy.
Whatever. I'll tell you just for the heck of it. My take is that... I know. I actually had something to say. I find it very interesting that... All these things, well, we're going to move you out so we can clean up, or you're all messing with the grass or something. It's very interesting that this kind of thing always takes place at like midnight or 2 a.m. rather than right out there in the sunshine. And maybe they wouldn't have to be paying so much overtime if they did these sorts of things in the day when maybe someone could actually get a good recording of it or whatever.
Yes, and that's what my point is, too. I think that they do a lot of that stuff in the cover of in the middle of the night so that there's not as much press there as they haul everybody off. At least that's what I think they were planning to do, and it didn't happen.
Well, I heard that Jesse Jackson showed up a couple of days ago and kept them from taking the medical tent down in New York there.
Oh my God!
But
why would they want to take down the medical tent?
Well, there's some some legal whatever that says First Amendment be damned, you can't set up a permanent structure or a semi-permanent structure because poor people can't sleep out in the open just like rich people can't, as they say. So,
well, the whole thing about Scotty Park that's a bitch is that it's a privately owned park. So that's why they won't allow those guys to have bullhorns there. They have to play by special rules because even though it's considered public property, it's privately owned. And so they make the rules.
No, I haven't heard. I knew it was privately owned, but I haven't heard that they weren't allowed to have bullhorns.
No, that's what's known as the people's voice. That's why if I play something where somebody's actually speaking, it's hard to hear because they have to echo it back all the way through the crowd because they're not allowed to have any kind of amplification whatsoever. And they thought that that would stop them, but it hasn't. It just makes it a little more difficult when somebody speaks to the crowd. So the idiots that own Zuccotti Park are making it as hard as possible for these kids. And I call them kids only because I'm an old bitch, like, you know, 80. I'm old. But, you know, they make it hard for these kids to get their message out and to do what they're doing. They make it as hard as possible by putting all these stupid little regulations on them.
Well, the number of regulations are pretty amazing.
But we don't have any regulations on the damn financial industry.
Well, no. After all, the First Amendment says you can assemble peaceably to petition the government for redress of grievances, not petition the corporations and the gamblers and masters of the universe and so on.
Exactly. And they are the masters of the universe. They run our entire world. That's why the kids over in Europe are getting involved.
Well, yeah, that's pretty amazing, too, that just seems to have caught on to, you know, to some degree, even internationally. So
900 events were on Saturday. Over 900, it was like 925 events internationally happened Saturday. That's an incredible number. It boggles my mind.
Well, that is pretty good. Even that old fool Andrew Sullivan said, gosh, this might be something real or whatever. Well, of course, he's an old fool, so who knows?
Yeah, you know, I was actually going to play a Glenn Beck piece today, and I was like, nah, I don't think my blood pressure could handle Glenn Beck today.
Well, I mean, it's always funny when he starts crying, but
I know. I didn't listen to it all the way through. I'll have to take a tranquilizer and listen to it all the way through to see if he starts crying, because that would be rich. So did you attend any of the movement activities down in L.A., sir?
Not yet. I've been, well, one of the reasons I'm disabled is I'm agoraphobic and I hate to leave the damn house.
Okay.
Tiny one-room apartment as it may be. Although when I do have to go out, I try to get as many activities in as possible.
No, I understand that. I'm getting that way because of my back. I'm getting I don't go out hardly at all anymore because, number one, it's painful. Number two, I just get freaked out because I don't do it very often anymore.
Well,
but
you have a
great blog, and I really did enjoy your perspective on the British riots, and so I really was hoping you would give us your perspective on the whole Occupy Wall Street movement. When you compare them to the British riots, and I call them riots because they basically turned into that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was, well, I mean, by riots, I mean, that's usually what happens when the police shoot somebody, or every once in a while at least. But, you know, I mean, being an old cynic and crank and all that, I'm not sure what actual good this does, because, you know, these people who have no jobs and are up to their ears in college loan debt and so on, can't buy any representation in the Congress or wherever. So, and besides the fact that most Americans are just, you know, struggling to stay alive and actually don't give a damn about politics, and granted, you know, neither they nor I think that anything they do will make any difference.
No.
So, you know, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, you can just have, oh, look, there's the people who've been sitting there for 6 months complaining, why don't they get a job, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know what the long-term outlook is, because, well, who does? But
yeah, and we don't know,
I mean,
because they don't even know yet.
It's encouraging in one way, but, you know, on the other hand, it's very easy to dismiss them as dirty hippies, which they have been for, well, ever since we invented dirty hippies back in the 60s.
Exactly. So, I was a dirty hippie.
Well,
amen.
I was actually a clean, well, I don't know if I was a hippie, but I was certainly a teeny bopper. But yeah,
but no.
I...
Do you think it's getting the message out? Do you think it's appealing to people? Because there's currently reports that the public in general is very sympathetic to the OWS movement, whereas most people now think the Tea Party is a bunch of morons.
Well, I was just reading that minutes ago while waiting for the phone to pick up. Something like 70% or something of New Yorkers or of New Yorkers surveyed were in general agreement with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I think the specific one that said it was fine with New Yorkers if the people stayed there as long as they wanted. But, you know, again, I mean, after a certain point, it sort of loses its impact, too. Although I'm not quite sure what impact it's really having.
Well, it's having an impact, I think, on our national discourse because you're hearing the talking heads on MSNBC. Every one of their shows brings it up, and that's a good thing. And, you know, there's the old line that any press is good, whether it's good or bad press. So, you know, they are in the national discussion now. So, you know, at least one thing is being accomplished. People are talking, the talking heads are talking about it. Now, if you listen to Fox News, it's all negative. Any other station, you might get, you know, a little bit of a middle-of-the-road view of it. But as far as, you know, I think what will be interesting is how they handle it once winter sets in. It gets damn fucking cold in New York City.
It does.
You and I live in California. Yeah, we don't have to freeze our ass off, you know. Those people are going to be freezing their butts off out there, and they plan on staying through the winter. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, I think.
Well, that's not too encouraging, but, of course, I'm not a big fan of the cold. So.
Neither am I.
No. I don't know. On one level, I'm just not really sure how much the actual issues are being brought up, and I'm, you know, not sure how many Americans are actually willing to, you know, agree that what the banks have been doing and the financial industry and yada, blah, blah, you know, I don't think they're really willing to accept that it's actually wrong or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm an old cynic. So.
Yes, and I'm an old cynic too, but then I also have that side of me that always has hope. My hopey, changey side. So I'm always hoping that I look forward to the worst because I hope something better will happen. I always hope that I'll be surprised by something, you know, good coming out of it. That's the way I try to look at it.
Well, aren't you nice, though? I'm just hoping that I can laugh as everything falls apart and gets worse. But
well, I do have my political nihilist side, which says we have to hit the utter shithole before we can get better.
Not until we have 30% unemployment or something.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, but sometimes I believe that. To wake up the vast majority of the voters, I think it has to get that bad. I really do. There's a big part of me that believes it has to hit the total. It has to hit the total skids before people will wake up. When you look on both sides of your own abode and everybody's unemployed, and you're lucky to have a job, that's when everything's hitting the shitter. And sometimes I really believe it has to get that bad for the majority of voters to finally go, this system is broken, vote all the bastards out and let's start over again.
Well, unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are still going to think that, well, it's all the government's fault, and if we'd stop regulating everything, things would get better and so on. And I don't know if that's the 27% who, you know, still thought George Bush was the greatest thing in the world and so on. But, you know, a lot of people aren't going to have the same reaction that left-wingers like we are are going through. So,
and I try to judge that. So, I do have friends that are centrist and some that are actually right of center. And I do try to feel them out on these issues. And some of them are scared and some of them actually back the the kids out there because they said, hey, you know, except for the grace of God, there goes I. You know, my kid doesn't have a big college debt because I can afford to put him through college. But if I couldn't afford to put him through college, he'd be carrying a humongous ass debt too. So, you know, I think people are coming more and more to sympathize with it because if you look in the mirror, anybody, even the teabaggers have, and I also subscribe that this is not a left-right position. This is just a human position, whereas it's us versus the financial corporation. And that's the message I think they need to get out the most, that it's not a left-wing thing. It's not, you know, it's not a political position. It's a human issue, and it's people versus the financial corporations. And we really have to be specific. It's not all corporations, although I think all corporations have got inherent problems and they're all greedy. The vast majority of what Wall Street occupiers are talking to are the financial institutions and the financial corporations.
Oh, well, I mean, the whole thing is a house of cards waiting to fall down. And
but we didn't let it fall down. We didn't let it fall down. No. That's why this all sucks bad. It would be interesting to see what position we would be in if they hadn't bailed out the bank.
Well, it would. We'd probably be better off, except for maybe for the poor slobs who work in the banks and aren't getting the big money.
Yeah. I agree with you there.
Yeah, I don't know. There's been a lot of, well, there was a couple of weeks ago at least, a lot of internet blather about, you know, Europe may be headed for real trouble, and that's going to make things worse, too. So well, I haven't seen as much of that in the last, say, week or so.
No, and you won't on the mainstream media because, number one, we get 60-second sound bites from them, and number two, they try not to paint a dismal picture of anything. They give you a little bit of it, but they don't really tell you how bad it is over there. And you and I both read alternative media sources, so we actually know that it's a lot worse off than what our media paints it, right?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I mean, also there's just a certain element of people who are going to say, oh, well, you know, shut up and suck it up and keep working and, you know, work hard and you'll succeed and all this crap. And, you know, maybe once people actually wise up and see that that's not true, but
yeah,
I think they've been pretty well brainwashed.
No, you're right. For decades, we're told how great we are and how we can overcome anything, and just keep buying your bullshit. Just keep buying your refrigerators and your homes and your furniture, and everything's going to be fine. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Keep buying that plastic crap made by slave labor and sold at Walmart. You'll mm-hmm. be happy, even though your credit card keeps going up and up and up.
Yeah, that you're paying 23% interest on it now.
Yeah, well, that was something that was pretty amazing. They wouldn't even let people into banks to get their money out, I guess because there were more than three of them at a time or whatever.
Yeah, no, they used it as an excuse. They closed. They told them to get out. They gave them 5 seconds, and they closed the doors and started arresting them. Even though people showed them proof that they were bank customers, they still arrested them.
No, I mean, you'd think that would tell everybody something, but of course,
exactly.
A lot of everybody's don't even know that, or they'll say, well, after all, the bank manager's an important person, and there shouldn't be hippie standing in front of his bank or whatever.
Actually, I saw the video of the one girl that I mentioned that had got arrested, and she was dressed in a business suit. So she didn't even look like a dirty hippie, and they arrested her. And she was standing there with her checkbook out saying, I'm a friggin' customer, leave me alone, and they arrested her anyway. Because she also happened to be an organizer for the unions.
Oh, one of those, huh? Boy,
yes, one of those. She was a socialist,
like,
for Christ's sake. Because all unions are socialists, you know that, right?
Oh, absolutely, especially the Teamsters.
Yes, exactly. They're all dirty commies or socialists.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gives Scott Walker. Did you hear earlier that I had Zombie on?
Oh yeah. I've been listening about to the whole thing here.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys calling in. My brethren, my brothers from my blog who read. I really love you guys for calling in because it gives me a chance to stand up, and it makes the show last longer, and we get other points of view. And I really, really appreciate you calling in. I'm getting to where my back is screaming now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play. You kind of led me into a piece that we have where supposedly Naomi Klein talks about what's going to happen after Wall Street in her point of view. And I'm going to play that. And then after that, I'm going to close the show. So I'll be on. Gwen is on the show every day at 4 p.m. Eastern. I will be on every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. And thank you, Mr. B, for calling in. And I hope I talk to you again next week, sweetheart.
Oh, well, if I have anything to add, I'll certainly call in, because chances are good I'll be sitting around the bunker doing absolutely nothing. So.
Oh, bless your heart. All righty, I'll talk to you later, honey. Thank you.
All right, hope the back gets better, too. And
yeah, they're talking about more surgery. I told them to piss off. All right.
Well, good luck. More right. Proof of evolution, but what can you say?
I know, exactly.
Talk to you later.
Bye, honey. All right, so here's a piece that we have of Naomi Klein. It says that it's after what she thinks is going to happen after Wall Street.
About it. Which side of this argument do you fall on?
You know, it isn't exactly a movement yet. It's a moment. Mm-hmm. It's a howl against inequality. It's a space that has been created that is sufficiently open that it's allowing people to find each other. It's allowing a movement to find itself, to find its footing. It would be very silly at this point to come up with a list of demands before this movement knows what it's capable of. The extent of those demands really depends on how powerful this movement is. As the genius of making the slogan "We are the 99%" is, you know, the sky's the limit. Really, it could include everyone except for a very small sliver of society. So why not wait and see how big this is? Because you know, if this is a relatively small movement, then their demands need to be small.
Right.
But if it's a big movement, they can dream big. We can dream big. So. The other thing is I think we have been, I call it NGO-ized, in the sense that there isn't really an organized left in this country anymore. It's been beat up by decades of witch hunts and McCarthyism and attacks on trade unions, which are really the backbone of the institutional progressive movement. So people are really in the rubble of those decades of attacks. And they're starting the process of rebuilding. So we've become used to NGOs with very strict, the media trained. They've got their demands. They've got their messages. What they don't have is a base. So there's no shortage of groups that have all kinds of very specific demands about what should happen with Wall Street and what should happen with the tax system. But they are not. They don't have power because a group that's working for income redistribution is never going to be funded by large corporations. So we have to work, as my friend Bill McKibben says, in a different kind of currency.
Right.
And that currency is bodies and energy and passion. And that's what the left hasn't had in trying to be so slick and sort of using the methods of corporations to communicate. No offense, Ezra. I know
I don't want to offend you. I know. I mean, I'm all for white papers and graphs, but, you know, I do a lot of those, and I can't say they get all that much done. They're good for a blog, but you need a lot in a movement. But that actually goes to a question about the other side of it, which is to say, when I was down there yesterday, I actually found a lot of Wall Streeters walking through, lingering on the edges, sort of trying to figure out what this meant for them. Did you see much of that? Do you get the feeling there's sort of an interfacing there, some type of odd type of engagement?
There was a youngish woman standing on a street corner in front of Occupy Wall Street, holding a sign, I saw her yesterday, that said, increase my taxes.
Right.
And I went up to her and I said, you know, who are you? And she said, I work over there. And she worked in a big corporate law firm. She didn't want to say which one. And she wants her taxes to go up. And she's identifying with the social justice demands. And she said something really interesting to me. She said, in my spare time, I work on immigrant rights issues.
Right.
And all we ever hear about is how there's not enough in this country. There's not enough money for decent health care and decent housing. And there's not enough space to treat immigrants decently. And I just realized it is just such a stroke of organizing genius once again to counter that discourse of scarcity, which is all we hear from Washington, the whole discussion about the deficit, to go to the site of maximal abundance,
right,
which just puts the lie to it. It is not a scarcity problem. It's a distribution problem. And it's really hard to argue against that when you're right down in the belly of the beast.
Naomi Klein, author of The Shock Doctrine and bearer of a truly wonderful last name. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Victor.
All righty, that was Naomi Klein. I think she was talking to Ezra Klein. I'm not sure. Anyway, folks, my back is yelling at me right now, and the cats are wanting to eat lunch, so I'm going to go ahead and close out this show. I always like to start it and end it with Ry Cooder. I love that man. The name of his song is off of his new album. The name of the song is No Banker Left Behind. And I suggest you go to his site, nonsuch.com. You can hear his entire album, and hopefully you'll buy it because I'm playing it for him every Tuesday. Anyhow, here we go. I'll be back next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Gwen has this show every single day, Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. I'm just taking her place today. My name is Dusty. We are sponsored by Roundtree 7, the number 7. My blog is leftwingnutjob.net, and I will have links to everything we discussed today on my blog after the show. Here's Ry Cooder. All you 99ers, have a good day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
My telephone rang one evening. My buddy called for me. Said the bankers all are leaving. You better come round and see. It starts in Revelation. They robbed the nation blind. They're all down at the station. No banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the station. No banker left behind. White House they went one day. They was going to call on the president in a quiet and a sociable way. And the afternoon was sunny and the weather it was fine. They counted out our money and no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the White House. No banker was left behind. Conductor's calling all aboard. We'll be leaving soon with champagne and shrimp cocktails. And that's not all you find. There's a $1 billion bonus and no banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. When the train pulled out next morning, no banker was left.